हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so Bhakti Sandarbha, Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 4, Bhakti is superior to all of the sadhanas. So as I remember, we're on page 31, but I'm not sure anybody else have any idea. No? Okay. So here then the pointed out is that we're bringing us through, that the Jiva Goswami is bringing us through here, that the deity worship, in other words, because we don't see all living entities in connection with the Lord, we just see ourselves and what's important to us, right? And so even you say you see other living entities, like in an ideology, but in that ideology, they're not individuals, right? They're an identity, my family, my community, my nation, my people, like that. So it's not that that's a problem, it's just that they don't address beyond that. So they have that identity as long as individuals, they also have that identity. But if their identity, the individuality is in any way different, they don't have the identity anymore. Right? So this is the aspect is that it's still not about other living entities. It's just about yourself. That's the extended sense gratification. So when you start seeing all living entities as part and parcel of the Lord and all that, that's because of the relationship. It means you do have the intellectual understanding of it, of course, that that you can see is okay. You know, I mean, or you can understand that yes, Paramatma is in everyone's heart, so therefore he's there with the living entity. Mataji, I think your mic is on. And so then all these different so intellectually we see, but it's not that it necessarily changes our way we deal, right? So we can say it's okay, well, I see that, but does it change the way you deal? So that's the whole idea is then deity worship, then you're worshiping the Lord, then you start to see you get purified by that worship. But the worship is also not complete unless you're practicing seeing in this way, right? So in other words, it says that unless you're seeing all living entities and all that, your worship doesn't have that. It doesn't attract Krishna that much. But at the same time, you say you're supposed to worship because you don't have that. So then one could think, well, then how does that work? Because to do the worship, you have to have that. But if you don't have it, that's what the worship is for. So the point is you at least intellectually accept, you have no doubts about it, then you're on the platform of manana. And so in manana, then you're serving and all that. And then those occasions where you are dealing with others, then you try to see them in the context that they're all service of Krishna. And that's what's important. And it's not that just my particular external identities and they're in line with those identities, that makes them important. It has to be as no, because they're related to the Lord. That's why they're important. So we're switching. The neophyte is I'm the center. It's about me and I extend out from myself. And so because I'm worshiping the Lord, he's important because this is my guru. He's important. And these are my friends because they're my friends. They're important. Or this is my house or land because it's important. But if you adjust that, then another living entity thinks, no, but that's not my house. This is my house. So this house is important, not your house. And like this. And my guru, this guru is connected to me. So therefore he's important. So he's more important than your guru because your guru is connected with you. Yeah, that's fine. But my guru is connected with me. So my guru is more important than your guru. And so these kind of elements are there, but you're switching it. That is, the deity is there and these are all his servants. So you're switching the view. That's what's the important thing that's happening here. And so that's happening by this manana, where you're practicing this, you're analyzing this, you're trying to do, so that you're trying, that's then pleasing to Krishna. Just like, yes, chanting on the platform of Nama Bas may be there, but your intent is to come to the platform of pure devotion. Therefore, it's pleasing to Krishna. Right? That, and you'll be progressive. And so there's always that point until you come to prema, but even on the platform of prema, you're still serving and following the other devotees. Like that, it's always there. There's always that thing, is that their connection to Krishna, Radharani is dear to Krishna, therefore, and the acharyas are assisting Radharani, I will assist them. So it's all coming down from Krishna, it's always descending. Because the neophyte, their tendency is always look at things ascending. That's just the way they look at it, because it's not about, it's an intellectual thing that, you know, it's that their academic philosophy and all that. No, it's just the way they see. Because they see that way, they don't notice that they've made their academic philosophy in the same pattern. Right? Because they are self-centered, therefore everything comes out from them. And then they see like that. And so you get the ascending process. So yes, others are, devotees are nice, so they're connected. That's devotee upset me, devotees aren't nice. Because they're just identities. They're not individuals. Right? As we go and we see the individuality, that they are servant of Krishna, and that's why they're important. Whether they're nice to me or not, that's another thing. If they're nice to me or not, that's between them and Krishna. But the point is they're special because of their relationship with Krishna. You reverse it, it becomes descending. So that's what you're practicing. Then from practicing at manana, and that, and becoming purified by worshiping the Lord and trying to please the Lord, then we come to the point where we realize this, right? And that stage, then technically one doesn't need to do deity worship for that purpose anymore, but one always continues deity worship because Krishna is always the center. It's just that whether it's being done formally through the Archamurti or one's performing the worship of Krishna to himself personally, in his pastimes as assistance to the other devotees. Because the point is when all the devotees are in the pastimes, it's still worship. It's still worship of Krishna. You know, it says the gopis, nectar devotion, Rupa Goswami mentions that the gopis, because they cultivate their personal beauty just for Krishna's pleasure, just by that personal beauty, they're worshiping the Lord. Right? Despite not even necessarily doing any particular interaction, just that they are trying to look beautiful for Krishna, Krishna seeing them, they're already worshiping Krishna. Then on top of that, then they have the dynamic expression of that love and things. So the point is this intent that you're trying to please Krishna and serve Krishna, then that's the whole point. So it, in the pastimes, it's naturally manifest. Then we have in the Pancharatrik, where it formalizes, because we don't know how to deal on that natural platform with Krishna because of that sense of identity of servant of Krishna and that affection for Krishna. Therefore, it's formalized that you do this. And then from doing that, it naturally develops, right? So in this way, then it goes to all living entities. Then we're saying of the devatas, because remember, this is about the superior of bhakti over other sadhana. So it's superior over, we've already proved karma and jnana, and now in upasana kanda, the devatas, that they're not independent of the Lord, they're servants of the Lord. So we see them as servants of the Lord, that's appropriate. But the worship is for Krishna. You don't have to worship the demigods. So we're respectful to the demigods, but you don't have to worship them. You worship Krishna. Right? Like that. So that's the point. Then, and by seeing this and expanding it in that, you're seeing their connection. This is done, it says here, to quickly destroy attachment and hatred towards other beings. Right? So that's the point, is that we either attach to them or we hate them. These are two options. Right? So that comes down to, then we're trying to go beyond this material thing that I'm identifying with the body, therefore this one I like, this one I don't like. No, we're identifying a service of Krishna, and therefore then we try to see everybody in that capacity. So that's the element of the natural nature of the living entity to be friendly. It's an inherent quality. So in the spiritual world, one's friendly with all living entities, right? One worships the Supreme Lord, but one's friendly with all living entities. And so then also in that, then you're compassionate towards it. You deal nicely, you know, how they move, what are they feeling, how are they experiencing. So you do that. But it's not based on the bodily. That I identify with this kind of happiness or this kind of pain. So therefore, I appreciate those that have this happiness or this pain, and I try to interact and try to help. But if they don't have, it's a different thing, then I'd have nothing to do with them, right? So this is that aspect of, again, we're saying from the deity, then they're parts and parcels of the Lord. Therefore, then we deal properly, no matter what the situation. You know, just like you would see, let's say, there would be a situation in the American Civil War, because they would be fighting out in the fields surrounding, you know, the villages and stuff. This is villages all over the place. So they fight in the fields. They wouldn't fight. There was no urban warfare, right? They fought in the fields and that. But those fields and around that are all, those fields belong to people that are farming. And so then they would be fighting there. And then after the battle, then there'd be so many, you know, dead that'd be there, but also wounded soldiers. And so some families, you know, that were there next to them because of their compassion, then they would go and collect all of them. And because in those days you had, you know, the houses had these big verandas and porches and all these kind of things. So they would set them all up there and, you know, try to help them and nurse them. And it didn't matter which side they were. If they were Union or Confederate, it didn't matter. They would take care of both of them, because they would look at them. They're all humans, right? So they're extending it. But they're looking at it, I'm human, so they're, because the animals are killing and they don't mind that. So it's some extension, right? And so that's the idea, is that you're getting rid. But then sometimes when the other army would come along and see that they had both parties there, then who was the opposite party? They'd kill them. You know, even though they're guests at this person's house, you know, you can't come into someone's house and kill whoever you like. But they would do it anyway, because of their identity is that we're from this side and we hate that side and all this and that. So that's a lower level of consciousness. The other one's a little bit higher, but still inductive. But here you're trying to get to the deductive, that they're all parts and parcels of the Lord, and start looking at it from, I like this person, don't like that, because of our own attachments. That may have something to do with etiquette. They deal properly, so therefore you interact in a more pleasant way. Or more informal way, these people don't act properly, you deal in a more formal, or even avoid them if that situation is there. So, and so that compassion has to switch also, is that it's kind of because they're Krishna's living entities. So then the Acharya now continues on with the discussion. Compassion for living entities alone, however, becomes an obstacle for Bharata, who gave up worship of the Lord. Thus, the idea that compassion for living entities is the main part of bhakti and worship of the Lord is not the main part, is hereby refuted. It's the other way around. It's the main part is worship of the Lord, and naturally, because all living entities are parts and parcels of the Lord, therefore there's compassion or friendship with them. That's how it works. So he's pointing out that was Bharat Maharaj's obstacle, because in doing, you know, it mentions in the story, he was so absorbed in taking care of the deer and all that, that it would come and, you know, come and sit with them and get involved when he's trying to do his worship and all that, that his worship started to become curtailed. Or even if he could continue mechanically, he's thinking more of the deer and kind of dealing with the deer and all that nicely and not as much with the Lord. And so at the end, he's thinking of compassion of the deer, not thinking he's part and parcel of the Lord. Right? Like that. And even if there is that aspect of his partial of the Lord, but he's only thinking of that compassion. He's not bringing it to the point of how they're related to the Lord and all that. Right? So it's a fine point that's there. So the point is, this worship of the Lord is the main thing. Because otherwise, one could say, oh, so then compassion, we're worshiping the deity to get back compassion. That's the main thing. It's not worship of the Lord. No, it's worship of the Lord is the main. That's why we have the example of Bharat Maharaj. Otherwise, then we're going to be nice to all living entities. But if that takes the prominence over the worship of the Lord with the living entities, right? In other words, if it's just living entities, no Lord, that's a problem. If it's just the Lord, no living entities, it's better, but still a problem. But when it's the Lord and the living entities, that's the actual standard. Verse 3:29:15 says that there should not be excessive violence. This indicates that there is some violence in picking flowers and leaves as part of the activity of the Pancharatrika worship. One should not disrespect the demigods and should respect them in their relation with the Lord. Independent worship is condemned. Thus, it is rightly said that those who do not worship the Lord are fools. Right? Then from Bhagavatam, the great fool who tries to cross the ocean of samsara by holding onto a dog's tail approaches anyone except the Lord, for whom nothing is astonishing to accomplish. Who is full in his desires with a perfect form, and who is gentle with his devotee, Srimad Bhagavatam 6:9:22. So here is that he's concluding that taking shelter of anybody else other than the Lord and his worship then is foolish, because it's like trying to cross the ocean of samsara holding a dog's tail. If you're out in the middle of the ocean and your only shelter is holding onto a dog's tail and hoping that he can swim to shore, though you can't see the shore, there's a good chance you're not going to make it, right? So it's pointing out that that's the foolishness. But it mentioned here before is that excessive violence, he means how much is there, how much it takes to pick the flower is what you're doing. That's why generally when you pick, you hold one part and then pull the flower. That way, just where the flower connects, that part is weaker, it breaks off there. But if you don't, you just pull the flower, sometimes you break branches. So you can say, well, we're picking flowers, the branches broke, but that's not correct. You have to find a way not to do that, right? That's the whole point of not excessive violence. You can't say, because it's for Krishna, it's all right. So that then goes as you're doing service and all that, and you're dealing with others, and if you're overly deal in a strong way with them that's not necessary, you get the work done, but you could have done it in a more comfortable way that takes more work, but you don't, then that is excessive violence. Right? So that's, it may be mild, but if whatever it is, the whole point is this excessive violence. You always have to find what's it in. But to say that there'll be no violence, that's not how anything works. There's always something. You know, you're taking the potato, you know, and then, you know, peeling off its skin and then taking a big knife and chopping it up into pieces and then boiling it in hot water and then frying it in hot oil. And, you know, all this violence is going on and all that. Why can't we just, you know, happily live off of air? But even that, then we're violent towards living. In other words, one living entity is always maintaining them and prospering because of other living entities. That's just the way the place is meant. But there's levels of consciousness, and there's what is your circle. It means what is your duties that take care of your maintenance. That's the whole point, is Varnashram takes care of your maintenance. That means that to be maintained, you have to follow your duties. It's not that you do whatever you want to make. That's excessive violence. You're doing things that shouldn't be done. It's that you have to do what's yours. So it's your obligations that gives your maintenance. It's not a separate thing. It's not, I have these obligations, but that's only how you get things done. You can say, no, but I don't like obligations. But why are you going to work every day 9 to 5? You know, that's an obligation. Why are you doing your work when you get there? That's an obligation. You know, so everything you do is always connected with an obligation. Right? So then here, then you know, approach the Lord for whom nothing is astonishing to accomplish. He can do anything that he wants. He just does things in wonderful ways. The astonishing is how he went about it. But that he did it, that's not astonishing. What's amazing is how he's done it in such a nice way, you know, in relation to please the devotees. Like that. Full in his desires, right, to interact in a perfect form, You know, so he has an attractive form that attracts us, and therefore that, and he has the desires to be attractive and to attract the living entities and interact. That Prajumna, who is gentle with his devotees, so the dealing is always nice, and also then that experience is also nice. The devatas spoke thus to the Lord. Right? So Anucheda 107. Ka panditas tvad aparam sharanam samiyad bhaktapriyad rita girav surida krita gyat saravan dadati surido bhajato bikaman atmanam apyupa chapachayau nadyasya pachayau napachayasya. Upachaya pachayau napyasya. What learned person would approach anyone but you for shelter when you are the affectionate, grateful, and truthful well-wisher of your devotees? To those who worship you in sincere friendship, you reward everything they desire, even your own self, yet you never increase or diminish. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:48-26. Right, so he so this is rounding it up as who would do anything else but surrender to the Lord who gives everything, you know, even himself, but even having God, he still remains. He never diminishes in that. So one devotee can say Krishna is his, but at the same time, he doesn't diminish. He can still be someone else's and someone else's. Mother Jashoda is completely Mother Jashoda. At the same time, he's still Radharani. At the same time, he's still Sri Dhamma, Sudhamma. Still time, he belongs to the cows. That's the perfection that he has. He's, you know, his wonderfulness like that. And so affectionate, grateful, and truthful, right? So he always reciprocates. He always appreciates that they do anything, you know, individually for him as an individual. And he always reciprocates as an individual to an individual. The Lord has a nature of benefiting others, Suri Daha, and shows great gratitude even if the person helps very little. The Lord gives all desired things, kaman, completely, abhi, to the person who worships him. But there is no decrease when the Lord gives everything or gives to many persons. Right? It's not that everyone has to fight. Everyone has completely the Lord. Like that. Akur spoke thus to the Lord. So, yeah. Riti. In this Adhikarna, a comparative analysis establishes bhakti as the superior path, being the sole independent process. Other yogic methods like karma and jnana are depicted as inadequate for life's ultimate goal. Bhakti's superiority is evident as it is easily practiced and yields the highest outcome. Contrasting with karma's transient results, Ashtanga yoga proves ineffective due to struggles with material desires, while jnana leads to impersonal merging. Right? So means when you're having, you know, karma, jnana, and yoga, then they themselves are incomplete because they only function because of the Lord's potency's involvement, bhakti's involvement in them. Though one is devoting oneself to these processes and applying that mood and that of bhakti, and may even be, if one's even more understanding too, that it's by worshiping Vishnu that you'll get to these stages. Because in all of them, then karma, then Vishnu is the supreme deity. In jnana, then he's also the supreme of the mode of goodness. We're trying to come to there to get to the liberated platform. And in yoga, you're worshiping, meditating on Paramatma. So there's no, technically no deities here. Devatas. So that's why that's put on the side. But at the same time, is without that, that intent that it's about that the central feature is worshiping the Lord will be given up when you get what you want. So then it doesn't yield the same result. And even if you're using karma and jnana and yoga in devotional service, you have that faith, then it will naturally engage the position you're on. But if you're too overly attached to them, then the problems that come up from using them and the transient results that they give will be difficult. Right? So therefore, when you see is I'm all activities are just for Krishna, all knowledge and all efforts are just for Krishna, then that's the most easily performed. So whatever situation is there, you perform that activity, no matter what's there. It's not about that it has to be this situation. I only work to get that situation. No, I work to, if that's the comfortable situation, the natural, I work towards it, but whatever comes, that's what I work with. I don't not work because I don't have that situation. You start from wherever you are and you work, and then you see if it goes in that direction, nice, it might go in some other direction. And so you have some other plan. Karmakanda and Jnanakanda are deemed ineffective for reaching the Supreme Lord. Even Upasanakanda falls short if directed towards entities other than Lord Vishnu, as worshipping devatas independently is condemned. The recommendation is to exclusively devote oneself to the benevolent Supreme Lord, who graciously bestows blessings even with the slightest worship. Hence, the current Adhikarana established the superiority of bhakti over all other spiritual practices. Moving forward in the same vein, the next Adhikarana is dedicated to confirming the predominance of bhakti as the ultimate path for attaining the Supreme Lord. This is achieved by employing the six types of proof, tatparyalingas, and expounding on the chatushloki from the Bhagavatam. Okay, so now, Adhikarana 5, supremacy of bhakti as the ultimate path. So we're still Adhyayana 1, but now Adhikarana 5. Adhikarana Prakashika. Having demonstrated that bhakti, characterized by the worship of the Supreme Lord, surpasses other processes such as karma and jnana, the author proceeds to establish the supremacy of bhakti as the abhidhaya. This is initiated by addressing the unfortunate plight of those who lack devotion to the Lord. Subsequently, followers of all other paths are criticized as they ultimately experience suffering in the material world. Furthermore, the Lord himself declares that the devotee is the foremost among all yogis. The emphasis is placed on the idea that individuals from all varnas and at all times should worship the Supreme Lord, regardless of the specific sadhana they practice. Yeah. Should worship the Supreme Lord, regardless of the specific sadhana they practice. So even if they are working within the karma and jnana, that happens to be the thing, but it's karma formed to please the Supreme Lord. And it's jnana used to worship the Supreme Lord, or it's through the, you know, practical worship and all that. Then that's to please the Supreme Lord. So that's always going to be the whatever the sadhana, that's what's going to be. If that's there, you can even extend that. It's whatever religious process someone's following. If it's about pleasing the Supreme Lord, they will advance quicker in their process. If it's just about the ritual, it's just about the religion. And someone was mentioning the other day, they were talking, had been talked with many people from, these religious processes, these, you know, Western religious processes. And the main thing, it's always about the religion. It's not necessarily about God and devotion to God. It's always about that the particular religious rituals and technique that they follow, that's the real one. All others are bogus, rather than, no, it's a worship of God, and this happens to be the one through which I'm worshiping the Lord. So, it has that, still has that neophyte element that all of the living entities are nonsense. That's why then worship of the deity is important, so that you start including these, because otherwise you see is that in the world religions that they tend to not appreciate each other because they don't do deity worship. So it becomes harder for them. Following this, the author establishes bhakti as the abhidhaya, applying the tatparyalingas on the Bhagavatam. Here it is brought out that bhakti is what is emphasized in the beginning, upakrama, and at the end, upasamhara of Bhagavatam, by highlighting the necessity of directing one's meditation towards the Supreme Lord. Bhakti is consistently repeated, abhyasa, as the abhidhaya, as proved through the verses quoted in the preceding sections. The distinctiveness, apurvata, and the ultimate result, phala, of bhakti are understood in Vyasadeva's contemplation cited in Anucheta's 116 through 119, right? Because his point of that contemplation then is brought out very much, is that this is the point that he wrote all the Vedic literatures with his understanding, you know, his vast understanding. But having been instructed now by Narada, what was lacking and why he's not satisfied, because he didn't bring out the specifics of the Supreme Lord directly on that platform. Now meditating, now he's getting this understanding, proper understanding about the Achintabheda-Veda Tattva, how he simultaneously, the identity is God and the individual, you know, who he is. And we have an identity and we have the individuality. So that simultaneous elements of his and his energies being different and non-different, this kind of aspect that brings it out. So that then brings it up to the highest platforms of actually understanding pure bhakti. Additionally, verses praising or promoting it, artavad, and providing reasoning or substantiation, upapatti, are quoted to conclusively establish bhakti as the abhideya. Right? Because that has to be the process. You know, because then if you see is that if you have the right process, then you have then naturally that goal and the other things will fall in place. You have the old proper goal, then your abhideya and the other things, you have your proper understanding, everything's going to fall in place. So if you understand properly sambandha, abhideya and prayojana, then everything is consistent. Otherwise you adjust what your goal is, or you mix the goal, then you start to mix your abhideya and mix your sambandha gyan. Like if I want distinction, adoration, and profit, then I look in the field for ways, you know, what situations will give me that distinction, adoration, and profit, and then I'm going to act in a way to try to get it. So even though I may be a devotee and trying for pure devotion, because I also have this attachment for these side things, it's going to alter my perception, and therefore it's going to influence. And it won't come out, it won't be pure devotion. So when it's no, all we want is pure unalloyed devotion service. And so therefore we look at the field according to that and try to act to our best understanding it like that, then it's going to bring us very smoothly and pleasantly to pure devotional service. After this, there's a more in-depth exploration of bhakti as the abhideya, specifically portraying pure bhakti as the constituent of prema, a confidential essence, rahasya, disclosed in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam. The comprehensive nature of bhakti is outlined, emphasizing its accessibility to anyone, whether of virtuous or dubious conduct, possessing or lacking knowledge, detached or attached, aspiring for liberation or having attained it, and whether they have perfected bhakti or are still progressing. Success in bhakti is attainable by individuals who have become associates of the Lord, as well as by those who are eternal associates of the Lord. Right? You become associate of the Lord by becoming associates of the associates. Right? Like that. So the point is bhakti is such that it doesn't matter who you are, it can still accommodate you and bring you forward. It means whatever is inappropriate, right? Emphasizing excessive, whether it was virtuous or dubious, you know, whatever is weak there, or possessing lacking knowledge, or detach or attack, whatever, aspiring liberation, or that these, whatever is lacking in these things, these will be given up and you will act in the proper platform. But from that platform you're on, there you could start, there you come forward. That's the thing bhakti can do. No other process can do that. All the other processes have until you come up to this standard, you can't function in it. So that's the whole point, is bhakti can function below that. What we see is when we have any of these, modern ideologies and all that, you have to come up to a particular standard first. Only then you can start. Well, bhakti, you can start from wherever you are. Right? Means you're not going to be considered on the platform nicely situated bhajana kriya until you remove so many of the very gross obstacles. And then you start dealing with the more subtle obstacles in an artha nivriti, and then you become stable. And then you start dealing with the bringing out the more and more personal aspects until you become the taste and all that. Then, you keep going until you get to prema. Following this, verses that underscore the bhakti process for the ultimate benefit, phala, of humans are revealed through the exchange between Narad Muni and Vyasadeva. Lastly, the distinctiveness, apurvata, of pure bhakti is underscored, emphasizing devotees of the Lord are conquered by him when they steadfastly follow this path of unadulterated devotion. Hence, in the current Adhikarana, bhakti is established as the Abhideya. Anucheda 108. So, okay. Excellence of bhakti is shown by disregarding the non-devotee. Ye bhartitam api chano nirigatim prapanna jnanam chatatva vishayam saha dharmam yatra nara dhanam bhagavato vitaran chyamushya samohita vitataya bhatta mayaya ke. Those who have taken human birth, desired even by the devatas, in which knowledge and dharma are present, are completely bewildered by the Lord's extensive maya if they do not perform worship of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15-24. So those who have taken human birth, who do not worship the Lord like that, then they are bewildered by the Lord's maya. That's all. So to that degree, we're worshiping. We're not bewildered. So when we're focused on worshiping the Lord, that's our main goal and all that, not for some ulterior purpose. Even though there may be some bewilderment there, it's going away. But if one takes up some position and gets attached to that, then one becomes distracted, and then that will go along with the devotion. At some point, it has to be given up. Otherwise, it will overcome the devotional creeper. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15-4. Udriti, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Oh, those of human birth are qualified to go to Vaikuntha and not the devatas. But those humans whose intelligence is misled by scriptures devoid of bhakti are cheated. They are lamentable. If we were born as humans in Bharata, then, worshipping Krishna, we could attain Vaikuntha very quickly. Those who attain human life desired by us, Brahman, others, in which there is knowledge, tattva vishayam, along with dharma, if they do not perform worship of the Lord, are bewildered by the Lord's maya. This means that even dharma and jnana, devoid of bhakti, are useless. Of those who take human life in which they perform dharma and jnana and not your worship are also bewildered. Or another meaning is, quote, they do not offer the Lord worship. They do not perform actions for his pleasure, end quote. They are devotees with material desires. Sardartha Darshani 3:15-24, right? So he's taking the whole line that from those who are simply following karma and jnana straight, that, the smartas and these kind of persons, they may be following exactly, but because they're not worshiping, probably that's the central point. It's the primary, not the primary. It's the secondary for them. Therefore, they become bewildered by the material energy, or even those who take up devotional service. But if they're not careful, then they allow these mixes to become too prominent. And they don't make the Lord the main thing. The Lord, their own lifestyle of their own pursuance of knowledge and freedom from the difficulties of material energy. Then they become bewildered by that self same positions that they're trying to cultivate. Like that. So therefore the Dharma and the Jnana, it has that. But that's the point. Dharma and jnana aren't enough unless they're connected with Krishna. If they are, then it becomes sadharma and it becomes tattva, right? So the same activity being performed to clean Krishna becomes supportive of and becomes absorbed into sadharma. But it's only because of the bhakti. It's not because of the action. It's not the ritual. Same with the jnana, that knowledge being done to understand, to serve the Lord better and more in greater devotion. Then that becomes part of the understanding the knowledge of the Lord, tattva, samanya, jnana. And so, but if it's not, then it just becomes some other element, even though it's about Krishna, which is nice and is purifying. But the point is one will be bewildered by that very thing that you're trying to go after that's separate from the Lord. Right? The Acharya continues, persons of human birth qualified with Dharma, including worship of the Lord and knowledge of truth up to knowledge of the Lord, jnanam tattva vishayam, who, even having these attributes, do not, na vitaranti, worship the Lord, which is the root of all dharmas and all knowledge, are bewildered by maya. Right? So therefore, those who are very much just doing those things, that bhakti becomes an anga of their karma and jnana, they're going to be bewildered. They stay in the material energy. They may stay in a very nice way, but they're still in the material energy. Or those who take up, you know, worshiping the Lord in karma yoga, jnana yoga, but they become too much absorbed in that and forgetting about the Lord, then they'll become distracted. And they'll find the difficulties that arise from following those processes. But by the association of the devotees and all that, and by the Lord's mercy, then at some point Krishna, he's all throughout, but at some point he makes it more obvious his, you know, his desire that you come forward towards him, and then you see the difficulty of those situations. Now you can choose to come more towards Krishna or to fall back into that position. So those who move forward, that's the natural form. That's the glory of the human form of life. Those who step back, then that's, lamentable, because one could do so much more. Then another verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, quote, Sutta, how lamentable. The ears of a person who has not heard the glories of the Lord are like snake holes. The tongue which does not chant the glories of the Lord is as offensive as a frog's tongue. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.20, Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Devotional service to the Lord is rendered by all limbs or parts of the body. It is the transcendental dynamic force of the spirit soul. Therefore, a devotee is engaged 100% in the service of the Lord, simply transcendental dynamic force. One can engage, and so the senses become engaged in that transcendental dynamic force. That's the whole. One can engage in devotional service when the senses of the body are purified in relation with the Lord. Right? Means you always, that one is, they become purified by engaging in the service of the Lord, but you also, then you start to see as you only want to engage the senses in the service of the Lord. Right? One, you want to do the service so your senses are naturally engaged as a byproduct, and you become purified, but with time, then as you only want to engage the senses in the service of the Lord. Right? Because it's like you may be engaging your senses in the service of the Lord, but you're also engaging your senses in other things that may be at some point connected to the Lord. You know, but the point is that you still have this aspect as your senses, but at some point it comes to us, no, it's just about the senses being engaged just to please the Lord. You don't want to engage them in any other way. It doesn't necessarily change the activities, but now it's all activities that you do are only seen in how they please the Lord. One can engage in devotional service when the senses of the body are purified in relation to the Lord, and one can render service to the Lord with the help of all the senses. Right? So they're in relation to the Lord. The senses are related to the Lord, and you can serve the Lord with all your senses. Right? So you have it from both sides. Oh, I'm engaging the senses, you know, like that in the Lord's service. Are they engaged? You have to see the senses are engaged, and you're serving the Lord by engaging the senses. So it always has the two sides, that you as an individual want to engage them, and as an identity, yes, they're engaged in the Lord's service, right? So both from identity and individuality. As such, the senses and the actions of the senses are to be considered impure or materialistic as long as they are employed only in sense gratification, right? So they start to become purified, and they're not materialistic when you start engaging them in the Lord's service, right? So only in sense gratification. When you add the Lord, then they start to become purified. When it's only about the Lord, then that's the perfectional stage, right? So in other words, you have the senses and their engagement in the middle. So you're on one side just engaging the senses and sense gratification. So then that's you know, that useless for the living entity. Then you start engaging in the Lord's service, so they start to become purified. Then it comes to the point you only want to engage your senses in the Lord's service. Right? So you're going through, but the activity may stay the same. Right? So you're engaging your senses, let's say, in eating, right? And so then you start engaging your senses and honoring prasad. Then it comes to the point you only want to honor prasad. So you can see is that the mentality changes. Right? So the one is I only want to eat those things that make me happy. And then it comes to the point I only want to eat things that have been offered to Krishna that have made him happy. So it switches like that. And then, yeah. The purified senses are engaged not in sense gratification, but in the service of the Lord in toto. Right? It means completely. That means it's just for his. You're engaging him in the service, but you also just want to be engaged in service. Right? So the one is that you're focusing and making the senses are only engaged in service and no maya. The other is you only want to be engaged in service. Therefore, it's already done. So it's easier. The Lord is the supreme with all senses. And the servitor who is part and parcel of the Lord also has the same senses. Service to the Lord is the completely purified use of the senses as described in the Bhagavad Gita, right? He has all senses. So all senses that are there are his senses. And we as part and parcels, therefore, we're connected with a portion of his senses. Therefore, naturally, we would want to do things that are connected with him. Like if we're in someone else's house, we do things in that someone else's house that is in line with and pleasing to the person that owns the house. Right? When we try to use the house how we want it, that's where the problem comes up. If we're always doing things in the house that's pleasing to them, then what's the problem? And your senses are engaged at the same time. It's not separate. Right? Does that make sense? You know? You put things in the house nicely the way you like it. You know, okay, then it's for you, but you put things in the house nicely how the other person likes it, who owns the house, then you're already in a nice situation. Does that make sense? You open the curtains, let in the light, or open the windows, let in some fresh breeze, and all that. So it's already in that element of it's nice. But you've done it for them, and so you get the benefit. The Prabhupada says, the king, you're serving the king. The king eats nice food. You naturally eat the food that the king eats because there isn't any other food. And so, therefore, you're satisfied. Like that. Service to the Lord is the completely purified use of the senses as described in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord imparted instructions with full senses. And Arjuna received them with full senses. And thus there was perfect exchange of sensible and logical understanding between the master and the disciple. Right? So he engaged all the different elements, you know, as an individual to explain to Arjuna as an individual who then received all these things. So that's where it says it's sensible and logical. So sensible means it is perceived. It's logical as the Anuman is there. It means the Lord as the source of all knowledge and the Shastras, then he is that is Shabda, that's the ultimate in Shabda Kaman. But then through logic, he explains it in such a way and gives examples that Arjuna can see them in relation to his position, and therefore he sees through his senses the application of that and how the value and the importance and the benefit of that. Therefore, it becomes perfect, right? So that's the whole thing. It's complete. It's not just because I said, you know. It's a matter of that it makes perfect sense. It's logical and it's sensible. Right? Sensible means it's actually what is perceived. And logical means it makes sense that, you know, this would be the natural mechanical order of doing things. So both are there. Right? So that's the difference. So we're saying it's sensible. Well, let's say the Mayavadis or the Buddhists will say that's all illusion. You know. Or others might say it's sensible because it's for my senses, but we're saying no, it's sensible because it's in line with God's senses. And we're part and parcel, therefore we're going to, you know, like the example of the hand. The hand puts food in the mouth, the hand gets all the benefit, the nourishment. That. Spiritual understanding. And thus there was a perfect exchange of sensible and logical understanding between the master and the disciple, right? So in other words, when you're teaching or doing anything or discussing, it must make sense to the other person, right? But based on it, they have to be making sense of something that is correct, right? That's coming from authority. Spiritual understanding is nothing like an electrical charge from the master to the disciple, as foolishly claimed by some propaganda mongers, right? It's not that he comes in some meditation and gives everything like this. It's not that mechanical. It's a matter of realization. Everything is full of sense and logic, right? It's not some other thing that you just touch them on the head and now they're perfect. No, it's through sense and logic that it's going to make work. And the exchange of views between the master and disciple is possible only when the reception is submissive and real. That's why then Pranipata is important. So if there's been service, then one can appreciate. Then one wants to learn more and one has that submissive mood. So that's why it's only in devotion in that where you have that mood of I want to serve. Therefore, I have served, I will serve, right? You know, isn't that what was said? And so then by that, I have served, that's the seva. I will serve, that's the pranipata and seva, and I will therefore do it again. So they go together. So then it becomes real, right? When the reception is submissive and real, right? And so when you say, does that make sense? It means, has it brought down to the point where you can see what it is? Otherwise, if it's still on just a logical platform, it hasn't made sense. There's still doubts that has to be cleared. And so then you can see how it applies. And then once it makes sense, then you can apply that knowledge with that senses. Right? And then that gives you the results in analyzing that. That then constantly, that gives you that consistent platform of manana, where then you get understanding. Then from that, then it goes to realization. So the first thing, does it make sense, means is it's removed all doubts. Then by practicing, applying that sensibility, then, you know, with that an analyzation further, then that becomes understanding. And that being done regularly, that gives realization. Does that make sense? Yes. Okay. It's amazing what is there. And we'll be just saying, oh, it's just there and the sense like that, but it's so deep what's being done. It's just been so nicely said in such a wonderful way. Right? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that one should receive the teaching of Lord Chaitanya with intellect and full senses, so that one can logically understand the great mission, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.20 purport. And also full senses means you have that it makes sense to you, it's sensible, and then you're applying the senses in manana. That's what's going on. Abhideya means applying the senses in the Lord's service according to that particular knowledge that has been gained. Right? Right, so, and one can logically understand the great mission, right? So how Lord Chaitanya is trying to uplift the great mission as the material world is established to uplift the living entities, right? Back to their natural position as servant to the Lord. And so that's the great mission. So that's why the Lord comes, he creates the material world, he comes as all his incarnations, he comes as his Lila avatars to attract the living entities back. You know, he comes as the scriptures and the teachers and everything like this. You know, he comes as the three modes of material nature and the adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhautic that just harass. And until one day you ask why, And that, and then in that context, then you uplift and everything. And so the idea is how many living entities can be brought back to Godhead. That's the great mission, right? And so then this is a specific application of that great mission as Lord Chaitanya is come. And by that application, they can be uplifted all the way to Braj. While other acharyas have come in that great mission and uplift them out of the material world, and they take them to other places throughout the spiritual world. How are we doing? Okay. Persons who have attained rare human life desired by the demigods, the devatas, but who do not take shelter of Govinda have cheated themselves. Right? Attaining human life after wandering 840,000 species. If a foolish person thinking his body to be a self does not take shelter of Govinda's feet, his birth is useless. Brahma Vaivarta Purana. So all these means he's wandered through all these species and he's come to the human form of life. And so if he doesn't use that for worshiping Govinda, then he's foolish because it will just mean, again, they go back under. Right, they come up and then they go back under. You know, so you have to use it. Otherwise, it won't. You know, just like, you know, you're mixing, let's say you put something in the sugar or something in the milk and you're mixing or you're cooking and that, or, you know, something's there. Then you see something come up that doesn't need to be there, something dark or black like that. If you don't at that point catch it, it will go back inside again and you don't know when it will come up again. Does that make sense? One's had that experience. So that's just the way it is. You have to, now you don't catch it, then that's foolish. Because otherwise, the jiva is not meant to be in the material world. That's the point. And so to stay here is not a good use of one's position and one's nature. So to go back to Godhead, that's actually smart. So in other words, to logically, sensibly and logically understand the great mission and apply that in one's life as the Abhideya. That's the point. Brahma spoke thus to the devatas. Briti, having shown disregard for non-devotees in the previous Anucheda, the author next cites the verse that praises the position of a devotee who has pure bhakti for the Lord, right? So you already mentioned about those who don't, the non-devotees, and how that's just a waste of time. Now he's going to glorify the devotee. Anucheda 109. It is said, Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchana sarver gunais tatara samasate suraha harava abhaktasya kuto mahad guna manoratena sati dhavato bahi. The devatas constantly dwell with all good qualities in that person who has pure bhakti for the Lord. There are no good qualities in the non-devotee who chases after temporary material objects with desire for material pleasure. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12. Like that. Yeah, so the devotee, he has all good qualities because the devatas lived there and all that. And for the non-devotees, they don't actually have any good qualities. Because those qualities you see are only qualities manifest in the gross and subtle body. They're not the soul itself taking on those qualities. Right? They're just having those qualities by karma. So you can't say they have good qualities. There might be things you can learn, but you can't say that, oh, the karmis are better than the devotees. Never. Never. Like that. Because those qualities aren't there. So whatever they're, just like a deer may be very gentle. But the point is in the next life, you know, the deer gets killed by a tiger. In the next life, the deer, because the thought of a tiger at the time of death becomes a tiger. Now where are those nice qualities? You know, or the same thing, he's very nice and gentle and all that. Then something goes wrong. People cheat him or this or that. And now he's grumpy and he doesn't interact. Where are those qualities? But the devotee, no matter what the situation, those qualities are there. That's the whole glory. That's the specialness. Okay, so end for today. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.